This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
It is a delightful 52 degrees outside right now, going up to only 70, highs of 74 tomorrow, 77 Saturday, 78 on Sunday, 79 on Monday. Nothing but sunshine, not quite sweater weather, but still beautiful. We're getting ready to talk about the presidential race, the presidential election. I would like for you to text me at 504-260-1870. Give me your predictions. How do you think this thing turns out? And with that, we welcome in Dr. Robert Hogan, professor and department chair of political science at LSU. How are you, Dr. Hogan?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. Let's talk about this presidential race. I know Kamala Harris did an interview on Fox News yesterday, and I got some texts from people that were looking at social media, and you know, it immediately reminded me of the spin room after a debate, right, where everybody goes on social media to spin the appearance or the debate of either candidate. It's not just with Kamala Harris on Fox. It could be Donald Trump on whatever, where they spin it to make it seem as though they're messing this up or they're doing this great or they're doing that or the other thing. Talk, if you will, about, how pervasive that is with people trying to spin stuff on social media. And a lot of this comes from the candidates or PACs themselves, does it not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is the new, mechanism for trying to spin things. You used to have, you know, the spin room after debates and things, but now you have, you still have a lot of opinion makers. They don't write articles in the New York Times. Well, they still do, but those are less opinion influencers as people on social media. So you certainly have a lot more of that than you used to. And you see this after every campaign appearance or debate or whatever it happens to be. There are people who have a stake in the outcome, and they're trying to get people to focus on certain aspects of a performance or a debate and de-emphasize aspects of it where their candidate or their preferred candidate didn't do as well as they thought they would.
How do people know when they see the results of a poll and who's leading what where, whether the poll is accurate, whether the poll is sponsored, whether for whatever reason? I've heard everything from, you know, one side is trying to make it seem as though the other doesn't have a chance to suppress voter turnout. One side's trying to make it seem as though the other doesn't have a, or the one side is trying to make it seem as though they don't have a chance to get people to go out and vote as opposed to suppress. Other people are saying, well, these polls are being done to set up to make it show that one side or the other is the clear winner so that after the election can be contested. Your thoughts as the department chair of political science at LSU about polling and all of that?
Well, I mean, the only thing I can say is that, you know, you still have a lot of polls that are intended to obtain a more positive result for their preferred candidate. And, in the past, what you've had is you've had major news organizations looking at the different polls that are made publicly available, and they have experts that recognize, well, some of these polls are from a reputable firm, right? And they dig into how they've done the polling, the mechanics behind it, the weighting that they use, and they would usually only report those kinds of polls. Today, again, as you mentioned earlier, on social media, you just have this flood of information. How do you make sense of it? I mean, in recent years, news organizations, as well as social scientists, have attempted to aggregate some of these things. And so that's what you see a lot of these news organizations doing, 538 and other ones in the media. What they do is they don't just base their, don't just emphasize one poll, but they say, look, we're going to look at the moving average of all the polls, okay, over whatever time period, the last week, the last 6 months. And by aggregating them, the idea is that you get a better view of actually what's going on. So you don't – any one poll doesn't weigh too much. However, in these aggregation mechanisms, they do weight the polls, right? Some polls have a larger sample size. Some have, or, you know, they also base them on their reputation of being correct about the outcome, those sorts of things. And so hopefully with this aggregation, you have a better perspective than you used to have when it was all based on one poll. So I guess I'm trying to say, in this modern age where you have lots and lots of different polls talked about on social media, you also have this aggregation of polls that I think gives a better perspective. Now, having said that, some people believe that the aggregation of the polls is being gamed by some political operatives. In other words, what they do is they say, okay, you're aggregating the polls. Well, we'll just do more polls that are biased for our in favor of our candidate. And you include that in your aggregation. And that's the way we have an influence on how the polls look. So, you know, we have a different perspective now on the utility of polls for assessing the state of the race. And then you have gamemanship trying to, find strategic ways of influencing, that perspective.
It seems like sometimes the candidates jump sides where they say, well, the polls are accurate if they win, but then the polls are inaccurate if they lose. And it can't be both ways, right?
Right. I mean, if you're ahead, candidates' internal polling based upon the assumptions that they have about the electorate and those sorts of things, if they believe that they're ahead and it matches the public polls, they're going to say, look at the polls. I'm ahead. Of course, they don't want to do that too much, because if they give the people they're trying to attract a false sense of security, many of them won't vote. So in some ways, no matter if you're far ahead or just a little bit ahead, or if you're behind, you want to make people feel that their vote counts and they need to turn out and vote.
When it comes to 538 or one of the reputable polling average places, what are they showing?
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
I think generally the aggregations show that Kamala Harris is, about 2 points ahead nationally. They tried to do this aggregation at the state level as well, although it's more difficult because the state polls have smaller sample sizes. And there is where you see an enormous amount of volatility. Whereas we've seen some trends. I mean, since Harris entered the race, she did seem to have a bit of a bump. And that was made even higher, I think, by the convention and also by the debate. But her support level has sort of plateaued and has not continued to rise. And so we have a situation where you look at the state polls and you find sometimes she's ahead, sometimes he's ahead, depending on which poll comes out. The way I view this is that the race is extraordinarily tight at the national level. It's extraordinarily tight in these seven battleground states. And what really matters in these situations is the turnout game. It's who can get their voters to the polls. And I think that is reflected in what the candidates are doing and what they're saying. It seems to me that they are very much attempting to mobilize their base of support by their actions, and it is about turning people out. Keep in mind that people are turning out now. Voting is occurring, and by Election Day, they estimate as many as half of the voters will have voted even before Election Day activities get underway. So votes are being banked at this point. I mean, in these competitive battleground states, if the organizations are doing their job really well, they will know soon who has voted. They won't waste any more time trying to mobilize them, and they can funnel that money into those towards those voters who haven't yet voted. So this is the high point or the most you know, busy time for these campaigns as they try to work through this, especially in these battleground states. And, you know, the question is, with the battleground states this year, is, you know, the Democrats are using their traditional campaign organizations, campaign techniques and tactics that they've used. Republicans are doing something very different. The Trump campaign has turned over the operations to a third party, an outside group, the Turning Point USA people, and is hoping that that will be as effective as traditional Republican Party organizations are at turning out the vote. There are a lot of Republicans that are very skeptical and worried about this, and we'll just have to see what happens.
Let me take a break. We come back. I get texts from people talking about a landslide one way or the other, an electoral landslide one way or the other. We'll talk about that when we return, some other things as well. Dr. Robert Hogan, our guest, professor, department chair of political science at LSU, talking about the presidential race. And people text me all the time about this one said that and that one said that. And to me, it's kind of like the Fox or pregame show or CBS pregame show. It doesn't matter who predicts who to win what. It all depends what happens when you play the game, or in this case, when the election happens. 6:23 traffic now, WWL. All right, 6:27, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Dr. Robert Hogan, professor, department chair of political science at LSU, talking about the presidential election. Voting is already underway, begins here in Louisiana tomorrow. Dr. Hogan, you know, I get texts occasionally from people opining that there could be a landslide one way or the other in the Electoral College, or I guess popular vote, not that that really matters. Thoughts on that?
No, absolutely. Anytime that there is a close election like this in the past, you look, oftentimes, you know, it breaks, you know, for one candidate, you know, it breaks one way. For whatever reason, voters are influenced or affected by some set of conditions or something. And so they break in one direction, and it ends up being an electoral landslide. I mean, this has happened in recent years, and I suspect we're set up right now because it is so competitive in each of the seven battleground states. You're going to see something very similar this time. It's going to go mostly in one direction or the other.
People text in also worry about, you know, peaceful transfer of power and so forth.
Yeah,
it's a lot different when whoever is contesting the election is not in power, correct? Constitutionally and so forth?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean the counting of the electoral votes will be done by Kamala Harris in the joint session of Congress this time. I think the situation, given its competitive nature, is ripe for contestation. I mean, reports have indicated that the Trump campaign is already preparing to contest states if they lose them. And, you know, what that involves, you know, we don't know. We know what happened on January 6th. Last night, I think Trump said it was a day of love, last time. I don't know if that's how most people would describe what happened in 2021. But I think that, you know, the competitive nature of this, it is ripe for contestation. And, you know, I think there is a potential for violence, just given what polls show us.
But I'm going to run a little bit late here just because I want to get this question in. I remember seeing a picture of John McCain the day after he lost the election, just pulling out, going to get a cup of coffee, where suddenly he becomes irrelevant. When it comes to something like this, the losing candidate, if they're not the incumbent, has a lot less power than does a sitting president.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if Trump loses, the key question is, does the whole Trump movement, what happens to it? Does it stall? Does the Republican Party reinvent itself?
All right. Thank you, Dr. Hogan. Appreciate your time. As always, we'll take a break. Come back with Mike Strang, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, here on WWL.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.